Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Godzilla and Kong are at it again. X-Men 97 is cooking, and we have reached a major milestone in geekdom on this show this week. Welcome to Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and today I got my co-hosts Matthew Aguilar, Janelle Wheeler, and Connor Casey with me. What's up, gang?
What's going on, y'all?
Hey, happy to be here.
And like I said in that intro, we have some fun stuff to talk about today. The MonsterVerse is back at it with the release of Godzilla X Kong, the new empire, or Godzilla Kong, I don't know. Multiplied by Kong, I'm not sure, but we're going to be talking about it. We've also got to talk about the funny thing I alluded to, because we were talking in our chat. We have reached a major milestone on this show in terms of X-Men. So we got to talk about that and celebrate that. Also continuing, we got to do our continuing coverage of Invincible Shogun. And there's some exciting things happening in the world of gaming slash tabletop that, Matt needs time to murk out over. Plus, we got some extended comics talk that we couldn't even fit into our spinoff show, The Pull List. So let's get right to it. All right. Our big review of today is Godzilla Kong, the New Empire, the latest chapter in the MonsterVerse, which has been going on now a decade. How crazy is that, right? Like, jeez. Since Godzilla 2014, we have been at it with this version of King Kong and Godzilla. But this one's coming out at an interesting time when a Godzilla movie just won an Oscar with Godzilla -1. And this is the first MonsterVerse installment that we've had since then. So I believe I'm the only one who ventured out and did the kaiju level job. Oh, Connor Casey's on it today. All right. So Connor Casey went out, and I like surprises like this, and saw Godzilla Kong, the New Empire. And what I will say is, if you're not into this MonsterVerse thing yet, this is definitely not going to be the chapter that gets you into it, right? Like, if you didn't like it before, you're not going to like it now. We still have, like, long-arm Godzilla running around doing his thing. We still have Kong and the humans and all of that stuff. And, you know, critics have said this one's like a video game or just something like that, or this is the MCU MonsterVerse and things like that. But for me, you know, because of the Monarch TV series, Godzilla Minus One, there was this whole incentive to go back and watch all these films leading up to this one again. And I think when you separate, I think there's going to be a whole phenomenon of when we separate movies from like film Twitter coverage of movies, it's a very different experience when you just get to watch them again and don't have to hear what the world thinks about them. They're dumb, but they're fun. They're pretty much they're the concept you would hope for in these kind of crossovers. You get big monsters fighting. There's at least one of them we can connect to with Kong. And this movie with Adam Wingard, the director of Godzilla versus Kong, is literally just the next chapter in that story. It's everything from Godzilla versus Kong continued. There's some crazier revelations about Hollow Earth, and we get these crazier villains in Scar King and Shimo, and, you know, we're going deep into Tohoverse to pull monsters now. But all in all, it's just dumb fun. And if you liked it for that when you saw Godzilla versus Kong, you'll like the dumb fun of this one with Kong getting a mecha hand and Godzilla getting purple. So we're getting our Star Wars, you know, our Star Wars thrills off. You know, Godzilla's a whole new lightsaber now. So, yeah, it's dumb fun for me. Is it on the level of Godzilla Minus One? No, this series, Godzilla's not even a character in this series. Like, Godzilla's just literally a moving plot device. It's like, Godzilla's coming. What are we going to do? Run. And like, that's Godzilla's entire plot point. He's just the power hitter, right? It's like, we need someone deaded. Who do we get? Godzilla's got to dead these things. And that's literally been his function in this entire series. And there is no personality to Godzilla in this. Godzilla's not scary in this. It's just Godzilla's there, and Kong is the main character with these humans, right? And this one's interesting because you get Baby Kong and Scar King, and there's more apes, and apes, more apes is good. It's like Matt with helmets. More apes, better, you know? And so you add that in, and Kong, and like where this kind of leaves things, I just finished writing up how it sets up a third film, is interesting, at least the Kong half, which has always been the stronger half. So it's more of the same for me. Kong, how'd you feel?
I actually dug this. This is the, like you said, it's dumb fun. This is the, I like that we can have the super serious stuff with Godzilla Minus One and Monarch to a lesser degree. And we can also have this where it's just, hey, let's take these giant figures and smash them together like they're action figures. And the last 20 minutes of this movie are an absolute trip because of exactly that. This does feel more like just a Kong movie, with Godzilla just happening to be there. The whole story is Kong in the Hollow Earth trying to find his people, and winds up finding out that, hey, there are a bunch of apes still around, but they're under the tyrannical rule of this really messed up looking orangutan fella named the Scar King, and this basically ice version of Godzilla he's got as a slave, you know, to kind of enforce his rule. And Godzilla, meanwhile, is just on his little European vacation, where every 10 minutes or so we cut back to him and he's taking a little nap inside the Roman Colosseum, and it's freaking adorable. And you're like, this is one of the most terrifying monster movies ever. And he's just, he's eepy. He needs a little nap. But then he's in France and he's in Spain. He eventually gets to the Arctic. And his story isn't really anything. He's just kind of wandering around. He goes, hey, I sense something stronger is coming. I'm going to go get powered up. Unfortunately, Matt, he did not learn the old Power Rangers mantra that too much pink energy is dangerous. And he goes and gets that pink energy. And then they wind up down in Hollow Earth. There's a big fight. A third kaiju plays a role that the trailers actually kind of kept you from finding out about, which I don't know why. It doesn't really serve a purpose, but when they do show up, it's like, hey, cool, they're here too. The human characters in this one, I felt like there were just enough to where it didn't go, okay, stop distracting us with boring human stuff. Get back to the monkeys. And Dan Stevens being brought in as the new addition on this cast, I think he's got kind of an Ace Ventura meets Star-Lord kind of thing going on, and he's a lot of fun. But honestly, I felt like this could have just been a Kong movie, and it wouldn't have lost much. It might not have been as big of a hit as the box office, because everybody loves Godzilla, but this is Kong's movie through and through.
Money, 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 money. Money. Yeah, we gotta get that cash.
You could have had him like as a surprise, like, is that Godzilla's music? And he just comes out and has the final fight, but you didn't need him.
Godzilla Glowing Purple sold a whole lot of tickets and merch in this. So I mean, is pink. I don't know why I said purple. Maybe I'm just losing it. Godzilla Black, right? Like Goku Black is a good Dragon Ball reference for those who get it. This is about money, right? This is Warner Brothers maxing out on this MonsterVerse stuff and making money. You got Toho still doing Prestige Godzilla. If you want to get into the minutiae of Godzilla, that's out there. And yes, guys, I reversed my position on minus one, but I insist on the black and white cut. That's my only caveat with that. But that's out there. But this is never going to be that. But if you want to see the action figures get slapped together and now in pink and with a mech hand, this is the movie for you. And it is big screen spectacle because, you know, just they've gotten it to the point where you are invested. There's a whole like kind of early first act sequence that's just Kong in Hollow Earth on the trail of these other apes. And that is probably like my favorite part of this movie was just him and like his first encounters with these other apes and how that all goes. And like, yeah.
The movie just turns into God of War 2018 for a bit where it's like, childlike figure with bearded older person holding an axe going through a mysterious land. Where have I seen this before? All right.
It pretty much is that. And so, but it was awesome. And like, you know, you're attached to this Kong character at this point. And it's pretty miraculous that they've done at least that, and you get some other kaiju cameos and stuff like that. And they've whittled the human characters down to just like, the good ones. And there's a whole, I think it's hilarious that the best parts of this one are the human characters who don't speak like ever. It are still like, you're like perfect for this movie. Go see Dumb Fun if you want. It's good for the big screen. And this MonsterVerse franchise in weird ways is one of the most only reliable kind of big spectacle franchises we have outside of comic books, right? Like we know we're going to have at least some kind of fun with this. And it's good to see this get a theatrical and not this HBO Max stuff. And all right, that's it. I think we've done enough. I think we did the thing. Godzilla versus Kong. Read our coverage on comicbook.com, anime. The whole team is breaking down everything that's going on with this movie, what it means, what it's leading to, and just helping keep track of all this MonsterVerse craziness. So check that all out over there. We have a bit of breaking news. Wouldn't be a show without some breaking news. Matt, you'll like this one. It looks like they're trying to not only get Neve Campbell back for Scream 7, but they're roping Courtney Cox back in. So it looks like we might be getting classic Scream out here. We might be getting classic Scream out here, bro. And I know Matt loves that.
That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, look, I definitely am a supporter of the kind of that new era of Scream, right? So, like, it was awesome. But if we can't have that, I'm all for this. let's go classic. I'm good.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Briwood. You know, shout out to one of our biggest fans and on the live show, Briwood. But yeah, man, I was loving the new cast with Scream 6 and kind of the Ortega, Melissa Barrera kind of Carpenter sister arc we were on. But that's gone now. Like, they blew the bag and that's over. So if we got to go back to something, go back to the classics, because I think Scream 6 showed me, like, yeah, these aging characters can still be interesting. Courtney Cox in Scream 6 was actually pretty interesting in Gail's story arc and where she is in life now after kind of losing Dewey. And that scene with her was pretty badass versus Ghostface in her apartment. And she went out like, you know, she took it like a G and still survived. So having her come back and them deal with kind of like the legacy, it'd be a fun, and I can see, because it's Kevin Williamson doing this, the director who was the writer and co-creator of this series. And I think they could do a really good meta kind of movie about what it's like to be roped into these franchises and never get out, right? And just like, even when they try something new, you're still attached to it, you're still back in it, and you're still doing this like so much later in time. And it can be funny, that can be hilarious when they're just like, okay, both these girls are probably packing big pistols by now, and they're like, look, man, we've been doing this for so long, we're gonna take you out. And if they're on the aggressive, like, that'd be interesting, because that's what I wanted from Scream 7 anyway. I wanted to see the Carpenter sisters getting busy on the aggressive, right? And so, and that's where they kind of alluded to. And yeah, so if Neve Campbell, and we get that kind of classic Scream, and if there's some other fun pulls from some survivors that we get back, I could see this being a fun meta narrative, because you got to have that meta layer to it, or it's just not Scream. But that's just me.
Right. No, agree.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
I didn't watch Scream. Scream was not my jam when I was young, but I like it now. I know. Well, horror. Oh my gosh, Chanel did not like horror when she was younger, but now it's like this cult classic. So I watch it and it doesn't like scare me. I'm just like, oh my God, there's that actor. Like, this is almost like funny at times. So I've definitely come around to it, and I'm excited about this casting. Well, hopefully casting.
All right. Well, that's some breaking news. Also in the comments, we gotta also say, yeah, like, we gotta also shout out, we usually should have done this probably at the top of the show, but it's been kind of a busy week and a busy morning and a lot flying at us, but shout out RIP to Louis Gossett Jr. Excellent actor, man, activist, and just great, great human being. You know, he even was still relevant appearing in the Watchmen, HBO's Watchmen TV series, but, you know, all the credits of an officer and a gentleman, just weird genre stuff like Enemy Mind, Jaws 3D, kind of classic serious stuff like the Roots TV series, The Color Purple, like, you know, and just, you know, this man did so much and is just another one of the good ones, man, that we lost, like one of those just stand up character kind of people in the world that we just kind of losing here. And so go check out Louis Gossett Jr.'s work. Go check out his filmography. Go check out all the things that you didn't even know he did, and, you know, how influential he was in some ways. So RIP to him. Back onto our show, into the regularly scheduled rundown. I told you guys we had reached a milestone today, and that milestone is this. If you don't know the history of this show, when we started and Janelle kind of joined us, Janelle wasn't into comics, and she definitely was not an X-Men head. And we always kept the joke about, like, trying to explain comics to her, we would just try to explain, like, one of the first things we tried to explain was Cable's origin, right? The origin of Cable. And Janelle famously looked at us and said, what the hell are you two talking about? And that became a mainstay staple on this show, that whenever things get too just deeply nerdy, that we're like, man, we're trying to figure out Cable's origin again. Here we are. But Janelle, I want to hear, after this latest X-Men 97, Episode 3, Fire and Flesh, you, maybe without even knowing it, you just witnessed the origin of Cable. How did it actually feel when you saw it play out as an animated episode?
Who is Cable?
Just okay.
Is Cable Nathan the baby?
Yes. Okay. Cable is Nathan.
Okay.
The virus he gets in. Okay. So like, just to bring this all together, just like I said, I didn't think you were there yet, but just to bring it all together, they send him into the future at the end. When he comes back, he's Cable.
Okay, that makes sense. Let me take a sip of my tea. No, I'm just kidding.
Because he's older.
This episode was so good. Regardless of like the babe, like just the drama between, you know, two genes and I hope spoilers are okay here, but
this
I cannot believe how riveting this animated X-Men series is for me. Like, I am so fully invested in these storylines, and they're not tiptoeing around like small issues. Like, they're showing sexual tension, they're showing like adult drama. Like, this show is it's just amazing. It's such a banger. And uncanny.
It's uncanny.
It's uncanny. Astonishing. Yeah. I mean, I get now why this was such a huge show for so many people back in the day. I also understand why people love their X-Men. This is what I need. Like, I need to feel that tension between mutants and humans. I need to understand, like, all of, I guess, the drama and, you know, the mistreatment of mutants. I get it now. Like, I'm feeling this. I understand. I have, like, my heart is with the mutants, and I understand, like, the struggles. And this is, like, everything I needed before I started reading so many X-Men comics. So I'm anxious to start reading more X-Men comics with all of this context, even if it's not with these particular characters. But yes. Okay. So I'm very interested in Cable, but truly, like, even if the baby went on to be no one, and I never knew what the baby was, like, that baby became like Cable or anything like that, the episode was just solid. It was really good. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the great thing about X-Men, the animated series, and X-Men 97 is what you're getting is kind of a hyper-compressed run-through of major X-Men storylines. So this one was called Inferno, is what this is based on, which is a much longer storyline and crossover in the original X-Men comics. But like I said, the original animated series and this show kind of compress a lot of those storylines together. But you are getting the full context of the characters, the history. And I think this was a big week for X-Men, and it was kind of a coming out week in a way, because we all realized we love the drama of X-Men the most. Like, people were like, who did not know X-Men were like, wow, this show is a mess and I love it. Like, these people got, it's like a soap opera. And it was like, yes, this is a boy soap opera with themes of discrimination and social stuff that you can, you know, argue makes it deeper and stuff like that. But, you know, at the heart of it, it's a lot of soap opera mess. People come back to the future. There's evil twins, babies that are sent to the future. And then, like, yeah, all kinds of twists, turns, you know, who's a lovers are and who's not. And so, like, yeah, people are finally realizing what kind of makes X-Men, what the appeal is, like you said, and what makes it different than Avengers. Like, Avengers has drama, but they don't have this level of family drama that X-Men has.
Right.
Like, X-Men is a kind of an odd family drama before we had, you know, what's his name? Wes Anderson doing Royal Tenenbaums. You know, Charles Xavier was putting us together with awkward teenage kids doing his thing. So it's good.
Oh yeah. D-Block. That's okay. So the comments are on fire today, but
yeah, I know. D-Block, I try not to laugh like so hard. Yeah.
But he brings up a good point, because I think that's part of what is also working about this series, even in the intros, because they did it again here, right? They're doing so much like deep dive X-Men history and finding a way to work it in to the current plot. And they're just referencing stuff. And for the fans who have, like, you know, remember that stuff or have been around the comics and things like that, they're able to pick up things, and they're just like seamlessly weaving it as if it was always around in the animated series. And some of this stuff wasn't really touched on. So it's impressive, like, how much they've worked in, and that is a big one, right? Magneto, Rogue, like that whole storyline is, you know, a big, was a divisive one in the comics.
Did that happen before Age of Apocalypse, or is that where that started? I can't remember if it happened before that. I feel like it did. I feel like they had like some.
No, that was before. That was before. Yeah, that was before
Age of Apocalypse built on that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because then afterwards, then you start getting into the, you know, like the Joseph of it all and all that other fun stuff. Speaking of, that's probably why I love General Hospital. That's probably why I love it. It was by my love of soap operas and Days of Our Lives. I love General Hospital. It's my favorite soap opera. Poor Charles for life, right? But and then Days of Our Lives, like right after that. But X-Men is probably where that love came from. It's the same stuff, okay? Like put a mob boss in X-Men and you got General Hospital, okay? That's all I'm saying. Sonny Corinthos should be in X-Men. I will say it is interesting that I look at it and go, like, there were some that were like, wow, Inferno is a huge story and could have easily taken more episodes. Like, you could have made this into 3 episodes easy. But I really like that they condensed it down to this, and then we can just, like, move forward with the fun Cable of it all. Like, we can get to that part and start dealing with that stuff. Like, I don't know. I kind of dug it. I'm okay with not everything being decompressed.
Well, I like that Cable's already, there's a lot in this that this episode does subtly, because I wrote up there's an appearance for Magic in this episode, but like we've seen Alana Rasputin in the animated series as a little girl, so it's like, well, when did that happen? But we have a comic that can fill that in, and we talked about that on the pull list, which you should check out. But Cable has already been in this series. What we've done is go back and actually backfill where he came from and that whole arc, which we didn't have. And so They're handling X-Men continuity, but they're also handling the animated series continuity flawlessly. So, like, all of this stuff actually matches up to what we've seen and the time travel. And, yeah, we're going to stop the show a minute because I'm not letting these comments pass. Check out the live show if you're listening on podcast. I'm with, who said it? Because we're, who said it?
Bo Hope Forever, baby. Damn right.
Addy, we're locked in. All My Children, Erica Kane, the greatest of the soap operas. All My Children's good, too. Yeah, I'm an All My Children.
You know, Sarah Michelle Gellar was the original Kendall on that show.
I used to look, saying. Oh, really? Man. Yeah. I used to look across the street at you GH peeps and be like, I don't understand you. You better stay on that side of the street. We watching All My Children.
I was a Jerry Springer person.
Ooh. Oh, I mean, I was too. Oh, Jerry. Yeah. Oh, come on.
The minute the soaps came on, I was out.
Oh, local.
How dare you?
I was watching TLC, like house flipping and stuff.
Oh man. Oh, those sound like the good cable days. Yeah. No, I was in the days of just, you had the broadcast channels. Fox was the rebel and you had your weird local affiliates where it had Jerry Springer. So like, yeah, it was only like a 6 channel flip, but, All My Children, shout out everybody loving soap operas. But yeah, the X-Men, I think they did it. This X-Men 97 is it's something else. It's better than it ever had the right to be. And I think it's surprising a lot of people, and sorry if we were skeptical, but you know, we've been burned by nostalgia bait a lot of times, so who knew we'd be cooking with this one. Connor, did you see this episode?
Yes, I did. This thing just goes full on haunted house there for a minute, and it's like, here's everybody's deepest things that they're sensitive about. It's like, hey guys, I think something's happening with Rogue and Magneto, and poor Gambit's just in the corner like, guys, stop making fun of me for it. But no,
yeah, there's
the thing's crawling out of the freaking TV for Jubilee and her new boy toy. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, there are parts of this that are like legit scary and like little parts. And I love that they're doing a level of adult humor when they're just like, oh, Rogue and Magneto have the Dage Room booked up every day.
Really, like, working on her endurance with the new headmaster. It's like, no.
Yeah. it's good. So I think we are all here to say, watch X-Men 97. Janelle, you are now full circle one of us. You now can tell people the origin of Cable. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So, sorry, guys. Moving right along to Netflix. Am I the only one? Did you guys check out Three Body Problem?
Oh, I
can't tell. I can't tell how much this is bubbling. Yeah. Yes. Talk about Janelle. Let's get your initial thoughts. What'd you think about this one? I'm kind of curious.
So I have only watched the first two episodes because my husband and I decided like this is going to be one of our shows that we watch together. And I dreamt about it last night. I can't stop thinking about this. This is the perfect mashup for me. It has like sci-fi alien elements. It's got this weird like spiritual connection. It has obviously like just a ton of just weird stuff happening. And I am just all about this. The cliffhanger on episode two is wild, and I have a feeling it's going to get really, really, really insane. But I am just, I adore this. They even mentioned like the multiverse. Like, I don't know where we're going, and I just can't wait to keep going there. Like, this is wild. What is the, what was it? OA, the OA. Did you guys ever watch that? It kind of reminds me of that. Oh yeah, there's the video game element. Like, this is my favorite show right now. I am so on board. Wow. And the cast is just so, so cool. It's disturbing, it's haunting, it's beautifully shot. Like, I'm all about this. I can't wait to see where it's going. And if you're gonna spoil it, I'm taking my headphones off.
No spoilers. We're not gonna spoil anything. Yeah, this is made by Game of Thrones creators, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, and working with Alexander Wu, who is also a famous producer and writer. And it's an adaptation of the Three Body Problem by, I'm not going to butcher the author's name, but it was a series of novels that were very famous. And yeah, I think they did a good job with this. The books are dense. Like, this is all about like real science, kind of using real science about space, time, travel through space, aliens,
physics,
you know, physics, all these. There's a whole dense part in this about, you know, what these aliens can do with a proton at one point. That's like theoretical physics kind of playing out for you in a screen in a montage. And it's like, what? Okay. So it's very interesting. But because this is the Game of Thrones creators, you also get these utter moments of like horror and just gruesomeness. And there is a sequence in this show that I will not spoil, but I was just looking up. I think it's in episode 4 or 5 that will probably haunt me for the rest of my life. Like, will haunt me. And I was just like, this? And it takes some sudden shifts, yeah. Because you're like talking science, human drama. Whoa, those people just got gruesomely murdered. Okay. Sure. And so, yeah, it's really interesting. But I think that what it does is it successfully in this first season sucks you in and makes you take all this heady, meddy stuff and get settled with it and get into this interesting question of what this story is proposing. And if you don't know, it's about what happens about kind of making contact with an alien species, but in a more kind of science realistic way, and like what the consequences of that are and how they play out is very different than most of your sci-fi genre stories. Because like I said, it's weighing on real human geopolitics, real science, about everything from like, you know, the time dilation of traveling light years and what that means and all this stuff. So really interesting, punctuated with moments of real gruesomeness. I know a lot of people will probably be frustrated by where this first season ends, but just remember this was like a 3 or multi-novel series. So we're just getting into the first part. And when you get into the deeper premise of the show, you'll understand why there are certain restrictions, because this isn't a sci-fi genre thing. It's about real, like I said, science. And if people are coming from light years away, you know, you're going to have some time to deal with that. So it's an interesting thing. I recommend it. A lot of people will jump into it just because it has the Game of Thrones creator's name on it. But the cast is excellent. Benedict Wong is in this, and he plays a much different character than Wong. He's really entertaining as a kind of espionage guy. Isaiah Gonzalez is in this. My boy from Overlord, which is still Jovan Adepo. Overlord, one of the most criminally underrated kind of movies of the last few years is in this. And this Liam Cunningham from Game of Thrones steals every scene he's in as the kind of head of an espionage unit and wing. And there's just other people who come into this who really elevate this series. So real interesting. If you're a sci-fi head, check this out. Especially if you've never kind of encountered this show, it's worth checking out.
It's beautiful too. It's just really pretty to look at. Vision.
A lot of beautiful shots, a lot of beautiful sequences, and a lot of, like I said, sometimes horrifying stuff that you'll see.
Yeah, like brutality. Whoa. I mean, these are like serious. There's violence and it's gory. Yeah.
Yep. And Janelle, just hit me on the side when you get through episode 5. I want to hear what you have to say.
Just episode 2, I can't stop thinking about how much one person, like if this ever did happen, if we were ever contacted by aliens, if the wrong person, just that one person got word and they just felt like, oh, I'm going to respond however I feel. And it's not like agreed upon by a huge group of people. Like, it just like one person can change the course of everything because had a bad day.
It terrifies you. It literally, that's the kind of terrifying pitch of this book is like, the actual contact with aliens and that whole dynamic would be as chaotic as real human life is. People are different, have different opinions. Governments have agendas. Everybody has agendas. And what would that look like is not a smooth process, or how we get into it is not as smooth as movies would make it out. And so this book takes, like I said, it's trying to lean on real geopolitics, real history, real science to kind of carve out a more quote unquote realistic view of what would happen if this started to happen. So it's interesting. Check it out. I think we sold some people. So I think we did the thing. Let's pay some bills, come back. And when we come back, we got to talk about Invincible, Shogun, the new Marvel Overwatch game, which I'm ready to put some hurting on people about, and a whole bunch of Matt's agenda. Stay tuned for all of that. Welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast of comicbook.com. If you missed our first half, we talked about Godzilla Kong, the new Empire, the latest episode of X-Men 97, as well as Netflix's Three Body Problem. So in our second half, let's talk about what's going on the TV screen. This week, I partnered with Logan Moore, the host of our Quick Save Gaming segment, to do a deep dive recap on the latest Invincible episode, Invincible Season 2, Episode 7, the penultimate episode of Season 2, which I thought was a good one. You know, I thought it was actually a good one. Invincible has been kind of slowing down for some people. There's been this debate of whether it's lost its step in Season 2. But I thought Episode 7 did a good job of kind of reminding us that even when we think we're slowing down or getting bogged down with drama, too many characters, this, that, or the other, that Invincible can really just turn on a dime, introduce some new elements, and take us in some crazy new directions all of a sudden. I'm not going to get into my thoughts too deep because I did a whole deep dive on this. Go check that out on our feeds. But Connor and Matt, I know you guys read the comics, but Janelle, what did you think?
I was binging Three Body Problem.
Oh, that's okay. No, that's okay.
This is the first time I actually forgot to watch the latest Invincible. I was so obsessed with Shogun and Three Body that I just completely, it like, escaped my mind. And also X-Men now. I like X-Men more.
Yeah. I feel like X-Men's eaten Invincible. I'm not going to lie. Look, we keep it 100 on this show at all times. I feel like X-Men's come along and eaten Invincible's lunch in a big way. I think whoever is in Amazon and scheduling really needed to do their job a little bit better and look at the schedule and be like, this massive cartoon series is not something we may want to go up against, because you had the runway completely clear to just drop this season and be done. Then it would have been talking about Invincible, then talking about X-Men. Now it's kind of like X-Men's killing you all on the trends. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's brutal. But
I'll be watching this as soon as we end the show today. Because like, how could I forget?
I mean, it sets up a pretty hype finale. I will say that. Yeah. Connor and Matt, how did you guys feel about this one and Invincible in general right now?
So, I feel like season 2 is missing that thread that held season 1 together so well, which was Omni-Man and his you know, obviously trying to hide his true intentions. And then when it all comes to the front, you're like, oh, crap, now we got to deal with this. That held season one together so well. Season two, the theme is the after effects of trauma. And we spent a lot of quiet moments with a lot of characters dealing with some pretty horrific stuff. But that's not quite as gripping as Omni-Man just walking around being this walking nuke, effectively. And I'm reminded of that so much with this episode because the Amber stuff feels so much like a reaction to a lot of the negativity surrounding season one. Some legitimate, some just racist and sexist, and to hell with those people. Season two felt like, hey, we really need to pull back on that. She's almost not even a character at this point. It's just, hey, we got to get through this plot line that Mark had in the comics. And I'm just like, okay, we got to wrap this up. I know what the end game is with this, and it's not this, so let's move on. And then Anissa walks in, and it's that feeling again of, oh, a nuke just walked into the room. What do you do? And the episode immediately picked up from there, where you're like, she can just wipe the floor with everybody. All of the Guardians on the opposite side of the planet. At one point, the guy just says out loud, it's like, one freaking Viltrumite shows up, and we're all screwed again. And it's just this incredibly tense sequence where she just downs the kaiju that Mark's trying to fight, then beats him up, and you're like, okay, how can this get much worse? And then Langstrom shows up, and you're like, all right, this gets infinitely worse. So,
and that is the plot of Invincible, episode 7. Janelle's like sitting over there sipping her tea like, damn, now I don't need to watch it.
You got yeah. to still watch.
I was trying to black it out.
Oh, good. No, sorry about that. But I mean, all valid points that Connor's bringing up. So I think it's just timing. Like Briwood pointed out in the comments, right now we got Invincible, Bad Batch, and X-Men, and two of those are on the same service. So like it's a rough time to be Invincible, but this is going to be one hell of a finale. I've screened the whole season, and even if you didn't and just saw the setup for this last episode, you already know it's going to be one hell of an episode. So hopefully Invincible ends with a bang again and gets its buzz back, and season three comes faster and, you know, all at once, just weekly episodes in one big batch. So, you know,
although credit to them, they brought back one of the funniest jokes from the comics and had Tim Robbins do the voice for it. That was great.
The seance dog thing. Like, yeah, that was great about animation. Yeah. That made me laugh out loud. And that's another one that's like, right, they adapted it from the comic into the show, but made it like speak to the fandom. There's a lot in this episode that seems like it is back to the fandoms. It's like, oh, we know what you love. Here's a Viltrumite. Oh, we know what you don't like. All right, we're going to deal with this relationship plotline. You've been waiting all season and complaining. Here's your fight. And also, here's a joke about our animation, and you guys can shut up. And so, like, yeah, Invincible is cooking a little bit on this episode. I don't know if people are going to notice, though, but I'm doing my job telling you about it. All right, let's get into Shogun, which is, yeah, man, still, this show just... best of 2024. I'm still putting it up on the shelf this early. It's still first quadrant of the year, but I really don't see how anything is going to beat this show. Every time we expand, like talk about a show that can expand, we get a whole new character that we just didn't even look at for most of the time in this with Lady Ochiba, and we find out this crazy history she has and how nuts she is and what level of villain she is in this show. And yeah, it's pretty nuts. And just what this show does, both on the macro of the scheming, the political maneuvering, you know, all of that, and the micro of the characters, their inner and outer selves, and like what's going on with them. It is so much above like what Game of Thrones did. And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to, we are praising Dave, you know, Weiss and Benioff. If you ever happen to see the show, we are praising Three Body Problem. So don't take this the wrong way, but you know, that's the source material too. But like, yeah, this show, what it does, and especially with its kind of female characters in the midst of this, a side we don't ever really get to see of Japan usually in these stories. It's, you know, we hear a lot about samurai and men and honor and dying and blah, blah, blah. But how the women fit into this society and what they have to endure, and something this episode really kind of highlighted, is just fantastic. And yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just could go on. I don't even want to share it. I just love this show so much. So how are you guys feeling?
I dug the hell out of this. I think it's another solid episode. You talk about all of the political moves and machinations. It's really putting, I compared it to Thrones earlier in the season. At this point, it's just running circles around it now. And this really is kind of a villain origin story in a way with Lady Ochiba, but it's also a, when you have a society set up like this, of course you're going to eventually have people like this who are like, I've been confined in a way where I have been living a life of misery. And now I've got this sliver of a chance to actually do something about it. Of course you would take it. It makes sense. So I think it's another solid episode. Not as like jaw-dropping as, hey, I'm turning around cannons on people and blowing guys' arms off. Nothing there, but you don't need that every episode.
Oh, but we know Crimson Dawn is coming. Crimson Dawn is coming. So we know that.
Can you give me a plan that doesn't get us all killed? No? All right, Crimson Dawn it is.
Gotta love Japan. Gotta love feudal Japan. It's like, all right, we going at it. So we know, I mean, this is episode 6. I think there's 10. Yeah, we're coming down the back half. And so it's going down. But yeah, I think all of the things that happen and just, you know, the Mariko Blackthorn storyline and just all of that and the complications of that and just how they staged. This is like one of the best directed series I've seen in a long time. Just like every scene is just gorgeous and artistic and has like multiple levels of meaning to it. It's just, woof. It's good stuff. Matt, I know there's not necessarily as many helmets in these latest episodes as we got in some of the first ones. How are you feeling about this?
No, it's fantastic. I mean, I think you're right. As we're kind of honestly getting a little spoiled here in this first quarter of 2024, this is definitely going to be in my top shows of the year. I don't see, you know, so much other stuff coming that it, you know, pushes it down. But I mean, I think you guys said it great. It's excellent. I'm riveted in the, again, the biggest pluses for this show to me have been the exposing someone who isn't as knowledgeable about the culture to that culture and seeing essentially your avatar in a place to where you're in a position to learn all these things. That's been the strongest part of the show for me.
Can we put not to interrupt you, but can we just put a pin on what you just said? Because I think it's real important, because I've had this debate online and on Twitter, but like people who can't see that this was like a novel. Yeah, that this is a novel and what this is doing, who are like, this is a white savior story and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, guys, like Blackthorn, this book educates you about Japanese culture, especially at that time, what it was. And it does through somebody who has no idea what it is. And he's not heroic in that ignorance. It's constantly pointed out that like he's in some ways less sophisticated or knowledgeable about philosophy, life, death, how to view the world than they are. And I'm glad that's coming across and that you said that. That's all, because like that is what the story really is. And I keep saying the reason this book was fascinating to me when I picked it up, and for the same reason Moby Dick is enduring, not because it's about a white whale, it's because it's like this weird preservation of New England whaling culture that does not exist anymore. And it's one of the only, even in fictionalized forms, it has so many details and facts of that life in that world that don't exist anymore. And this book is the same way. Like this book literally walks you through what Japanese culture is in an exciting kind of way and exposes you to it. And on many deep levels of it, like I had forgotten my eightfold fence for many years, but now I haven't. Now it's back, you know? Now it's back.
Yeah,
I had to stay here and build my eightfold fence.
Wow, man, the impressions. Yeah, I think you raise a good point in that he's always like getting his hand popped. You know what I mean? It's always like, no, stop that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Like that's part of like you're seeing how honestly someone who is just, you know, completely kind of ignorant to so many deeper elements of a culture And, you know, I would have probably been the same way, right? So, like, you see that essentially play out. And you also get, you know, if it was just a bunch of, you know, exposition, it'd be different. And I'd probably honestly still be interested because that's I'm kind of a, you know, a history buff. And those are kind of the books and adventures I typically like to read. But the all of the action and all of the, you know, underworld type of stuff kind of mixed in with that is what keeps that exciting and keeps you involved. So, I mean, I just think it's been excellent. I didn't see this show like really resonating with me like this before it hit, but I'm glad I jumped in. You know, I gotta say it's mostly because of Kofi's, you know, being so excited for
dogmatic
it.
That's why insistent.
I jumped in.
You watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I think the Helmet Hunter is going to be my bio, my Twitter bio from now on. I think that's what's going to happen.
And talk about X-Men bringing this full circle. Like the fact that this episode ends with all these people going to war with all of this mess between them. There's like that final shot of them all cheering. Yeah, that's delicious stuff. You know, you got to get on the battlefield with all these conflicts around you. Gonna be interesting. All right, Matt.
I was gonna say
sorry, go
really
ahead.
Quickly, like, do you guys feel that, like, outside of our friend group, obviously we're all loving this, but I'm having the hardest time convincing people to watch this, or even people just finding it on their own. I'm like, hey, have you watched Shogun? And nobody is seeing it. I'm curious, because of like the Game of Thrones reference, do you think it would have done better on like HBO or sorry Max at this point, or somewhere else?
I mean, it has the backing of like all of Disney Plus, you know, advertising it.
Oh, so, yeah. I was
like
thinking Hulu.
Small. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think the biggest thing is that people not realizing, you know, there's a lot of people, and even people who pay for the bundle don't realize that, like, you can go through Disney Plus to watch this.
Yeah.
And some people, if they don't use Hulu as a platform, they're just like, huh, well, I can't. Like, I had to tell a neighbor, like, yeah, you can watch Poor Things on Disney Plus. You can watch Shogun through Disney Plus, especially if you have those bundle tie-ins. Like, it's all possible. But I also think it's another thing where people are just kind of trained. There's a lot out right now. And when the show is all over and done with and people see the complete thing, I think the word of mouth will carry it and good. People will do it. And then Disney will eventually probably license it out to stream somewhere like Netflix or something like that. And then we'll have this annoying thing that we have all the time these days where time doesn't mean anything and Suits can become popular tomorrow. And maybe, you know, everybody's going to remember that old ABC series Flash Forward, and Flash Forward is going to be the biggest thing on Netflix. You know, guys don't even know what I'm talking about, but it's a thing. So, you know,
I remember Flash Forward.
Yeah, exactly.
Very briefly. I remember it does signal something in my brain. Yes.
So, you know, it's people will discover it. And I also think, like you said, I think that the cultural and the subtitles and that, you know, we're still living in a 2024, but, you know, we still live in America, and at least over here, it's a problem. But people who have like Disney Star overseas, I think they're playing a smarter international game, because overseas this is doing well. Disney Star is out there and they just give you everything in that little thing. So it's I think it'll grow with time. All right, Matt, let's let you take over the show. It's your time to shine, buddy. We got a game trailer that we got to talk about. Let's go.
I just got to give Addy a shout out, killing it in the comments today, because the Shogun Shy made me laugh. That's a great comment and should be applauded. just throwing that out there. Marvel Rivals was announced. The very fair comparison to Marvel Overwatch, and a bunch of people are trying to find combinations for a name, but a 6-on-6 classic multi-character, you know, all this superheroes that you would expect, plus some interesting picks as well. We'll all have powers in a third person approach to this, which makes me happy, because I always prefer third over first. And you know, the trailer looks, I mean, it was pretty warmly received. You know, I know there's been a lot of talk about the voices. It's got an extensive cast, just going through all the characters here. So the game, the first, there's going to be 19 playable characters, which is kind of insane right off the bat. It's going to be Hulk, Doctor Strange, Groot, Iron Man, Loki, Luna Snow. Nice to see something. Magic, Magneto, Mantis, Namor, Penny Parker, Rocket Raccoon, Scarlet Witch, Spider-Man, Star-Lord, Storm, and the Punisher as in that initial group. And there will be a play test coming up here pretty shortly. It's going to be on PC. The one of the coolest things about it, and you can see it right there actually, was that it's going to feature destructible environments. So the level, the theory is like the level will constantly be changing and, you know, changing your strategies accordingly. There's also going to be team up moves like you see there with Groot and Rocket. There's also going to be like where Hulk can essentially throw some gamma radiation towards Iron Man, and then he can channel it and kind of unleash a devastating attack. So there's gonna be fun stuff like that. It looks pretty fun. I will say there's a part of me that's always a little like I wish the cast took more chances. And I will say this one, more than a lot of recent Marvel games, takes some chances. I mean, Luna Snow, having that character in here, Penny Parker, even Namor. I mean, we don't get a lot of, you know, Namor love in games.
No, we do not.
So like magic as well, like it's always great to see them, you know, but like most of the classic characters are here. I'm excited to see Magneto and the Punisher. Like there's some good, it's a good mix of characters here. I would always like, you know, I'm always like bored with Iron Man. I'm always bored with Hulk, like some of the standard characters, but I get it. You can't not have them in there. I am surprised to not see like Captain America, some other characters, but you know, you got to save other people, right? So it looks fun. I mean, for you, I'm not the biggest Overwatch player. I know Kofi is like, it was a much bigger player than me in that space. Like, are you
a much bigger player like a than you always? You? I'm a much bigger player than you always, baby.
fair enough.
Oh man. I liked it. I'm a little hesitant. The gameplay looked a little bit rough to me, like in terms of just the kind of fight dynamics, what it will feel like when I'm like battling people, hitting people, inflicting damage, getting damage inflicted upon me. I feel like it could be one of those like I'm dead before I know it type deals. It's hard to match Overwatch. Like you said, that's been such a kind of revolutionary game in some ways for a team-based battle. So I'm excited to see. I prefer first person, but I don't hate on third person.
Ugh.
Yeah, oh yeah. I don't hate on third person. And for a game like this, where your character is going to be doing such dynamic stuff with powers, I could see how first person could get a little dizzying. Like just that move Black Panther does in first person, you basically kind of have a mini stroke when he did that. So that kind of speed vortex attack forward. So I get that. But the raw fun appeal of it is something I still want to believe in. I want to feel like if this game is tight when it comes out, like, yeah, just being able to pick these characters, put them together and have these battles is going to be infinitely fun. And there's interesting things like Loki, super interesting character, is the kind of character I gravitate to. Mm. Somebody who can shape shift into somebody else and use their powers and do all these other weird magical things is kind of, it looks like there's going to be a level of complexity to these characters. And if they nail, because Overwatch works because everybody brings a piece of a puzzle that you need to put together to win a battle. You need healing, you need shielding, you need attack, you need all these sharpshooters, you need like all these things. So I hope it's just not you just pick random heroes and go at it. Like, I hope there is that level of strategy. Like, you need a Spider-Man, but you also need a Doctor Strange for healing and defense and stuff, but you need a powerhouse Hulk, and you need your kind of attack characters like a Namor or something. And then you have X factors like a Loki who can do a little bit of healing and a little bit of damage and a little bit of, you know, all this weird stuff. So I'm going to be interested to see if they get that part of it right.
So the real question is, Janelle, who are you picking? Because Doctor Strange and Loki are all over this trailer.
I know. And I love them both so much. But because I'm really bad at shooters, I would probably be a healer. I'd probably be Strange because, and that's just because I suck. But if I was actually good at this style of gaming, I would 1000% go with Loki. Or magic. Yeah. Is that
you
magic? Feel,
are you gonna jump into this? Yeah, it's magic.
Yeah, she looks ballin'. She looks sick. I'm definitely gonna give it a try, but like I am so bad. Like I'm just so bad at these styles of gaming. But I'm willing to give it a go because it just looks really interesting, and it feels like this is what any superhero game should be, in my opinion, because you're actually using like power sets and like things like that. This is, to me, this is what a superhero game should be.
Connor, I'm not familiar with your history on like Overwatch and this type of game. Are you excited for this? What are you feeling?
It's not really my bag. I didn't do Overwatch. Like in high school, Halo 3 and, you know, all the COD games were the biggest things in the world. So, of course, I played them. But when this, like the character shooter started coming out, I was kind of out of the loop. This looks fun. I think if I were to jump in, I'd get someone like a tank type, like Hulk, just so that I'm not worried about getting sniped from somebody. I do have one question, though. What's up with waifu Galactus there in one point? What the hell is going on?
Oh, Galacta. Okay. Right. I think her name is Galacta, a character created. I want to say she was in the mobile games, one of the mobile games, I believe. And she's brought over or she was in a comic, a one shot type of thing. But I want to say it was from one of the mobile games. And then she was brought over here. So we're getting some. It looks like anyway, we're getting. And NetEase is making this. And this is for PC and stuff. So that actually would make sense. I mean, for anyone who's like played one of the like it feels like 10 different Marvel mobile games, which are still going strong. A lot of them have been around for a really long time. Definitely think that. For me, I'm excited for, I gotta say, Magic is looking fantastic. Like just the big sword swinging stuff.
Teleporting. Come on, bro.
I mean, yeah, like she looks awesome. Cut. I'm really... Well, the trailer focuses on like the first batch, and then you get the look at the second batch as it ends. So I'm really interested to see like Mantis, Magneto. You know, I do look at it and go, why do we need Star-Lord if we have Punisher? I'd rather have Punisher in there because he, you know, doesn't get a lot of that game love either lately. It's always kind of more Star-Lord, which makes sense from a commercial standpoint. But I'm just like, we could have made room for someone else. I will also give love to Peter, who keeps pointing out, rightfully so, that Speedball is not in this. And I don't know how the hell he's not. That dude was made for a game like this. And his power is so bonkers and off the wall, and it would be perfect for an open field. So hopefully some more 90s love there. So anyway, that's coming out. I believe the play test that you can sign up for right now, if you go to the site, PC only, is in May, I believe. So definitely check that out. Next, I had a chance. I'm a big Masters of the Universe fan, and I had a chance to play through the core game and several expansions of the Masters of the Universe Clash for Eternia board game from Kamon. They have a like the board game is a cooperative affair. You're playing against actually one other person, the controller, who is kind of handling one whole team. And then you can have like a number of people, 3 to 4 other people playing against them. And you're trying to essentially accomplish different scenarios all set within the universe of Masters of the Universe. All the typical characters are here, He-Man, Skeletor. What's cool is the miniatures actually feature like, you know, Battle Cat, Panther, like you can actually have some of them riding on steeds and stuff. What's great though, is that the expansions, when you add those into the mix, they add whole other armies for you to control. A lot of times it's like, hey, complete this particular objective right off the bat, like some of the early missions, but then it gets into stuff like, you know, the terrain is always changing. You're sometimes having to rescue people. Sometimes you're having to just obliterate everything on the board. Sometimes you're trying to get point A to point B. There's a lot of different variation in the scenarios, and you can pick and just play one. You don't have to play like sit there for like 8 hours and play a whole thing, right? You can just play one. Typically you can do that probably within an hour and a half. So the combat's really fun. The power system is what kind of sets it apart, which is essentially that when a player uses a piece of these little cubes are your power essentially, and you gain them over time. And when the player uses one for a special ability, that power then goes to the controller, which in this case can be like the villain, right? So like that power then feeds into your opponent. So you are essentially giving them power when you use a special ability. So it's this like constant tug of war between like you want to save those and make those matter. You can't just use those willy-nilly because then you're just giving the opponent more ammunition to hit you back with. And they have certain cards that they can put into play that affect the entire board. So it's this really like nice back and forth between the players. Also, for Masters of the Universe fans, the expansions like introduce all kinds of like really like deep cut characters. Like, you know, obviously you're moving past the Man at Arms characters. She-Ra has an army, but then you're moving into like some really you know, B and C tier. And that's not meant in a disparaging way. That's just cool. Like, you get a lot of deep cut characters in here and they all feel different. They all play differently. It's a really fun game that I think those who love the world will really dig, especially because you can get an expansion that is Castle Grayskull. Now, for those who backed the Kickstarter, they actually got a giant castle, which is pretty dope. But even if you don't have that, the board actually like forms the castle, and like one team is defending and the other team is trying to attack it and bring it down piece by piece. So it's like, it really hits this like nostalgia sweet spot for some of those even classic board games. And then you're also like, the people who are defending can have weapons and mount things and like have, you know, ballistas and things like that firing out. They can generate minions and all kinds of stuff. So it's really fun. And if you're a fan of the world, I think you'll really like this. And if you buy the core set, the core game, there's a lot there. You don't need to buy anything else. But if you want to jump into all that stuff, like, there's a lot there. Like, you could be playing this game all year. So definitely recommend that. It's pretty cool, especially for fans of the world. And then moving into Cyberpunk 2077. This game has already had a board game that was kind of this area control take on the franchise. But now Go On Board, who made the excellent Witcher Old World game that I talked about couple months ago, they are making a new Cyberpunk game based on this world, but it is going to be much more story driven, player character driven. It's going to be like, you're going to really be diving into the modifications, being able to mod yourself, give yourself cybernetic implants, weapons, all that stuff that is kind of the hallmark of that world. You're going to be able to really do that, and they're going to lean more into the character player progression stuff. This is, you know, if you played Witcher Old World, you know how it brought all of those story elements into a really fun combat heavy game, and this is looking to do the same for this. They came out with a stellar trailer, but I'm very excited for this. This will be coming to GameFound, I believe, later this year. So hopefully maybe you get some time with it. Don't know yet, but I'm very excited for this. And speaking of Cyberpunk, this game has been like on a roller coaster journey, but has kind of come out the other side and is, you know, after a huge 2.0 update, several patches and expansion, people are liking Cyberpunk. And if you've kind of been hesitant, like me, to kind of jump into that game because you heard all of the rightfully so negative stuff about bugs and not working on consoles and all that stuff, they're doing a free weekend. So you can actually download the game starting today. You can actually go and download the game for free and get the first 5 hours. So you can do whatever you want in that 5 hours. They're not kind of gatekeeping you there, and play as much as you want, do all the other things for that 5 hours. And then at that point, you'll have a really good idea of how it plays. It's going to run all the way to, I believe, midnight on April 31st. So it gives you a really solid couple days to do it. It's on PS5 and Xbox, so regardless of console, you can jump into it. I am going to take advantage of that. I've had my finger on the button of the Ultimate Edition for a minute here because I've heard so many things about how it's changed and improved. So I'm thinking I might jump in, but I'm going to definitely do this. So, I mean, you can't turn down a free game, right? So that is my agenda for this week, but we're going to move into some comics. Because we had so many comics on the pull list to talk about, and there was one in particular that we wanted to get Janelle's feedback on, because she's been on us with this ride for Alan Scott Green Lantern. Number 5 is a pretty pivotal issue, and so wanted to jump into this. We saved it for this. Janelle, what did you think? I know you've been pretty high on this series, as we all have. What did you think of this one in particular?
Gosh, it's really pretty. We'll start with that. The battle sequences and seeing these two characters kind of go up against each other. Now, I definitely missed something in between, I feel like, I think I missed something, but I know who the Red Lantern. I know who Red is, but I still feel like I missed something to get us to where we are now. However, like the reveal, like there's such a big reveal. I hate spoiling, but with so many baddies, so many villains pop up in this, that it's really crazy. I wouldn't say that it's not like, I'm not like crazy about this book, but I liked it. Like, I'm glad I read it. I've been missing my comic fix, you know, but like, it's not, there's a lot of it's very wordy. There's a moment within it where, like the Green Lantern, like he's getting kind of the lowdown of who he is and what he stands for and why he was chosen. And it just gets kind of wordy and a little like over complex for me. I'm just kind of like, get me back to the action. But I mean, it's good. I feel like it's good. It's just not, I don't know. It's not my favorite.
No, I get it. And you're not wrong, because there's like a ton.
Well, we have been watching such incredible programming this week that it's hard for my comic book to like live up to like Three Body Problem and Shogun and X-Men 97, and you know, it didn't capture me the way that some of the earlier books in this series did.
I got you. Kofi, how you feeling?
This book takes some big swings that I didn't see coming. I think it's been a long time, and I don't think anybody's ever try to bridge the gap this way, this extensively, between Alan Scott's power and what comes later with Hal Jordan, the Guardians, and all of that, the Spectrum, the multiple colored rings and all of that. So this is kind of another, this is in some ways just taking the Geoff John mythos from the late 2000s, 2010s, and spinning it yet again to kind of connect it to this more magical version of the green power, of the Green Lantern power that Alan uses. And so that's the part where I think Janelle checked out, is that was a lot of retconning of Geoff Johns's kind of retcon of Green Lantern's mythos, right? And the color spectrum and where it comes from. It's a retcon of a retcon. And so that part did get a little thick, because I'm like, I still don't quite understand it. I'm like, sure, it's a sentient will of a thing that got pissed at itself and split and made red and other colors. Okay. But it's trying to connect the entire Green Lantern like universe as one kind of mythos. And I don't know if we needed that. I always liked Alan Scott being this other kind of Green Lantern. That was one of the things I thought distinguished him a lot, and kind of came kind of in handy in stories sometimes. Whereas if the core got like screwed up, Alan Scott was still good. You know what I mean? So, but overall, like the overall story of this is still is still the most interesting Alan Scott story I think I've read to date. And kind of making him a mainstream hero of his day in his era.
Right.
This is really interesting. So, yeah.
You know, it's funny. We have three different views of this, because but I love that. And that's also, I hadn't read this issue. So before I reached out to Janelle, I'm like, hey, you know, like, you think you can read this one by like Showtime? I hadn't read it yet. So then I like read it right after, and I got to the Starheart stuff, and I went, oh, it's going to be a little,
you're like, sorry,
a little difficult. Yeah, I'm sorry. Cause there's a lot, cause you're right. You're absolutely, both of you, 100%. Like, it gets really heavy into, you know, the origins of these powers, you know, the different nature of like the blood and green, and also too, just from a like conceptual thing of why these powers are here in the first place, chosen people, all that stuff, right? It gets into all that. That's why I loved it, but that makes sense. I'm already a nerd for like Green Lantern mythos and all that stuff. So that makes total sense, like why I was just like invested in that, because you put that around a very personal story about, oh my God, the person I love, who I didn't realize, like, you know, betrayed me for the, like, you put all that drama in the middle of, oh, he might die if this power is not there. And then you throw all the other twists in there. It makes, like, that stuff is really interesting to me, but I never bonded with Alan over the entire time really the character's been around, because he was so separate from everything else I loved about the core. Like, all the other characters that I adore and stuff, Alan always felt like this one-off character over here doing his own thing, and never really felt like that meshed at any place in time. So I never really gravitated to that character. And so this series has really brought him in to the fold where, yes, like, you know, they still feel separate to me, but they feel still connected as part of like an overall world. And I can, it's endeared me to the character in a much greater way than I expected. Also, that last page just made me, like, you know, hop for joy. That was an awesome last page. I was so excited for that. I won't spoil it, but that was great. So it makes sense. Like, this comic is hit us all in a different way. And that's kind of what I love. I know you, Kofi, wanted a second to hop on the gods train. What are you thinking about this series? We're six issues in.
So, you know, in terms of, unlike Ultimate, okay, so Hickman has two new books out right now, right? In Marvel, Ultimate Spider-Man and Gods. And it couldn't be more different. Whereas Ultimate Spider-Man has sucked me into the entire world of Spider-Man and can just now play and do anything in there. Go listen to the poll list this week for a full breakdown of Amazing Spider-Man 3 or of Ultimate Spider-Man 3. Gods has not. But what Gods has done more so than Ultimate Spider-Man is giving me single issues that really stand out. Like, I liked the first issue when we got to know, I even forget his name now, but the main character, when he kind of from the Order of Things or whatever it's called, and like when he just went through to solve that mystical problem, you saw all the little deals he made and all the little portals he went through to come back and then defeat that mystical villain while Doctor Strange and the heroes were like in the middle of this fight. This issue shows win. Okay. And this issue shows the our main character from, what is it? The Natural Order or the Powers That Be. It's a natural. She's from the Natural Order. He's from the Powers That Be. So this is all a mess. But anyway, this is a single issue that sees her making a journey to make a deal to correct something that she thought she did wrong. And she has to go see the Living Tribunal and his brother Oblivion. And it's a fantastic issue. It even has it's like a Tom King issue. This is the most Tom King-ish Hickman thing I've ever read, where it's just like a folklore tale where she has to go to like the River Styx and all these familiar places and make a deal with this jackal as her guide. And it's a really good parable about, you know, going behind the scenes of the Marvel universe and looking at all these different spiritual entities that we've seen show up in Marvel, whether it's like an Apocalypse and in all the Egyptian stuff, or, you know, the ferryman of the River Styx and Lady Death and Living Tribunal and all these cosmic forces. And she has to go to plead her case to this. And it's a really good single issue. And it ends in a very kind of horrific way that teaches you like the danger of what these beings do by just conversation and deal making and all of that. And it's pretty horrific where it ends. So like Hickman is cooking over there, but like, yeah, I think this book really needs to pull together that larger, I think it needed to execute this larger idea better and then settle into what makes it works, which is these people who are able to step through these unseen places, dealing with these different cosmic and spiritual forces and how they got to wield deal and use their smarts to kind of do that, or sacrifices and deals. So there's something here, but they really got to refine and get to the heart of it pretty soon, because yeah, we're six issues in and nobody cares anymore besides me. All right. I'm going to take us out by just mentioning that also released in kind of one thing that really kind of got to me this week was reading Dragon Ball Super Chapter 103. It was written by Akira Toriyama. And if this is the last issue we have of him and his work on Dragon Ball, I don't think there could have been a more fitting issue. I was really kind of emotional by the end of reading this chapter. And it was just kind of a one chapter where Goku and Gohan go at it with their newest powers to see who's more powerful. Of course, it's a Saiyan competition, so the whole thing breaks down. Then Vegeta's got to get in on it. You know, Goten and Trunks got to get in on it. Broly's got to get in on it. And it was just a Saiyan. Like, it was everything that Dragon Ball is. It was Saiyans and power-ups and fights and fan service battles of who could beat who and who's stronger and how does Gohan's beast compare to Broly's berserker and all that. That fandom stuff that I love so much about Dragon Ball, the debates, you know, the wish lists, the fan, like all of that. It was beautiful. It was like, I don't think Akira Toriyama may have known he was going out, but like it was a fitting kind of stoppage point for his career. And just, I think an issue we will all look back on and hold up and kind of immortalize as the perfect encapsulation of his legacy and what makes the series so much fun. And it was a great issue. And just like, by the time I ended, I was really emotional because it just, it hyper condensed everything I love into Dragon Ball into one chapter and one spectacle. And it was fantastic. So RIP Akira Toriyama, read some Dragon Ball, read some comics. This is Comic Book Nation. We are the only show that does it have that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast of comicbook.com. But we do more than just this. We are a nation of shows. So every Tuesday we have Anime Initiative, in which Megan Peters and the anime team at Comic Book break down all the latest things happening in the genre, as well as manga and a bunch of other kind of closely related genres. Excuse me again. Every Wednesday, Matt does the pull list, in which he dips into the world of comics, pulls out the biggest things happening with the big two, Marvel and DC, and a bunch of the indie publishers in between, and tells you all about them with a panel of talented comics guests that often, for some reason, include me, as if I should belong there. Thank you. We also do Quick Save, where we take big events in gaming and talk about them with the Comic Book Gaming team. We also do show recaps for a bunch of big fandom shows. Right now, we are doing Invincible recaps. If you want to get into MCU stuff or X-Men 97 recaps, you can head over to the Phase Zero feed and listen to that, because they are covering all things that have to do with the MCU as well as X-Men 97. And Pokemon fans, we have a Wild Pokemon Has Appeared, the Pokemon podcast you can also check out on that feed. So we're giving you guys stuff, and sometimes we're doing weeks where we're out here every single day of the week. So be sure to subscribe on podcast platforms and subscribe to comicbook.com's YouTube as well as the Comic Book Nation YouTube. All right, that'll do it for us. We're going to get out of here. I believe what's coming up? April's going to be busy. April's going to be crazy. Like, I don't know if you guys have looked at the calendar, but there's a lot coming our way. Apparently, eventually, we got to get to another one of these Rebel Moons. I guess we got to do that. Fallout TV series. Yeah, unfortunately, we do. Fallout TV series is coming up, so we're going to have some fun new TV series to kind of, like, break down and check out. The First Omen. Yeah, we got some good horror coming out. Like, yeah, it's gonna be a wild month next month, guys. Like,
Cope, you forgot the biggest thing. The final boss is back in action when Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Roman Reigns team up to take on Cody Rhodes.
Oh, man.
In the main event of WrestleMania Night 1.
Is that next week?
Yeah, bro, it's like, next week, dude.
Yeah, because there has been a short amount of stuff happening in 2024, so it's been easy to keep it all straight. But WrestleMania. So Connor, Matt, like, everybody's going to be out and about doing their thing, and it's going to be crazy. So we have big things planned for that. I know Matt's ready to cook. He's still on the hunt for his wrestling idol, and we're going to try to make that happen. And it's not Sting. All right. So this is Comic Book Nation. We're going to get out of here. Peace. We love you guys. Take it easy. Later. Enjoy some fandom.
This is